The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
Expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Here at the Lotus Place, it is Wednesday night, July the 27th, 2016, and I want to say a happy birthday to my lovely mother, whose birthday was this past Saturday, oh my goodness, this past Saturday, and she looks young as ever. So happy birthday, happy born day, happy Earth Day to you, Mother. Welcome into the Lotus Place. We're here tonight, and oh my goodness, just so much going on, as always. I do want us to get into this Freddie Gray case. Three of the officers' charges have now been dropped, the Baltimore prosecutorial team not being able to convict either of the officers that have gone to trial, other than which one? One of them had a mistrial. What's his name? Poe, I believe. Some people say that the prosecutor overcharged. This really wasn't a good case. The way that the case was prosecuted wasn't a case from the beginning. And some people say, well, regardless of who prosecuted it, whether it was a black judge, white cops, black prosecutor, white prosecutor, Asian prosecutor, it doesn't matter. This is the system. And whoever thought that the police officers were going to receive some time for the death of Freddie Gray, which on April 12th, we saw Freddie Gray struggling in pain, being transported to the van, and something happened in the van. So, I mean, I'm like everybody else. So he flung himself around the back of the van and severed his spinal cord himself. And even if that is the case, that somehow this rough ride that is said to have happened and happens regularly, then why is it that we receive a ticket if we don't have a seatbelt on, but you can transport children on buses without seatbelts, and you're transporting so-called prisoners without seatbelts? So that's stupid. And according to Marilyn Mosby, who gave a press conference today, she did speak about how, although these officers were not prosecuted to the fullest of the law and would not serve any time, which I knew they wouldn't. Some changes have been made in the Baltimore Police Department. So prosecutors dropped all charges Wednesday against three Baltimore police officers accused in the arrest and death of Freddie Gray, bringing to an end one of the highest profile criminal cases in the city's history with zero convictions. Baltimore State Attorney Marilyn J. Mosby acknowledged the long odds of securing convictions in the remaining cases following the acquittals of three other officers on similar, though more serious, charges. So in a hearing Wednesday meant to start the trial of Officer Garrett Miller, prosecutors dropped their charges against him, Officer William Porter, and Sergeant Alicia White. Circuit Court Judge Barry G. Williams, who acquitted the other officers, was expected to preside over the remaining trials as well. And of course, since they opted for a bench trial, they were able to probably shop around and find a judge that would be that would favor them more so than the death of this young man, whose family, by the way, was awarded $6.4 million. So I guess now cities are willing to have us as taxpayers just pay for police officers or people being able to kill innocent people. Freddie Gray was standing outside. He had not been arrested for any particular crime other than standing outside, breathing while black, making eye contact with a police officer, and then running. Hell, many of us would run, especially if I was a young black male living where Freddie Gray lived in Baltimore and knowing the situation and being in that environment. Now, true enough, of course, me being black female, I don't really have encounters with police officers, thank goodness. But I know that if I did have an encounter with one, I wouldn't run, but Lord, I sure would say, look, I am so afraid of you. You know how y'all say y'all fear for your life? I fear for mine right now. As soon as they walk up to my window, I fear for my life. My hands are on the wheel, sir. I just want to make it home. Oof, Lord, because you just don't know with these people. But anyway, so, I don't know if you guys were listening. We here at Black Talk Radio had a black town hall on police brutality and policing, and we discussed some solutions to police brutality and what should we ask of the government and what could we as a people do to change our situation. So if you would like to chime in on that or listen to that show, just tune in to log on to Black Talk Radio Network, and you can hear that podcast. And when you go onto the page, do donate to Black Talk Radio Network so that we can keep these shows coming to you. We have some awesome hosts on this network. And also you can donate to the Lotus Place Radio Show at the Lotus Place Radio Show at gmail.com. And we thank you kindly. Danke schön. So anyway, so we want to talk about the Freddie Gray case. And also, black on black crime propaganda, the rhetoric. I don't want to hear it anymore. We are burying it here. You will not be allowed to call on this show and say anything about black on black crime unless you're calling it a farce. Just like when people talk about how Hillary Clinton care about children, mothers and children. That's really? After she gutted welfare reform, her and Bill Clinton. So anyway, black on black crime, I don't even want to hear that. I don't want to hear it. We're burying that. We're burying that phrase no more, because guess what? When Asian people kill Asian people, nobody says, ooh, what are we going to do about this Asian on Asian crime? And even if we did have black on black crime, goddammit, we were brought over here and some of us were brought over here in violent situations, and those of us that were not brought over here in violent situations, we have lived a tumultuous, violent life here, having our land taken away from us, people that were brutally lynched, people that were not afforded proper school and proper housing, the way that our families have been torn apart and just stripped down to the core by these drugs dumped in our communities, deposited insidiously in our communities to cause us all kinds of afflictions. So if there were, if there is a such thing as black-on-black crime, damn it, we all ought to be doing some kind of crazy crime or having nervous breakdowns like you see people having because of the stress and strife that we have had to endure. So I'm sick of it. It is time for people to start calling this out like it is. If you have health insurance, and if you don't have health insurance, it would behoove you to start having it documented how stressed out we are, how we have to deal with this racism, even if you don't recognize the stress that you experience. We all know that so many of us are dealing with everything from racism on the job still to women being discriminated in terms of their hair. Here we go with all of this psychological trauma and drama. I'm seeing once again a rise in people not wanting to hire black women because of their hair style, their hair texture, that is cultural assassination. So anyway, I can go on and on about that. But yes, let's have this discussion on burying this black-on-black crime, and also how can we heal after the trauma of seeing black people beaten and killed on TV. I know, and I joke about it, but on the serious side, seeing those killings like that, like a snuff film, and if you don't know what snuff film, what a snuff film is, that's when people actually like watch a real killing of someone, and it's for sexual pleasure. So, like watching these snuff films, it's like a millennium lynching. Okay, that's what I call snuff films, snuff films. So watching watching that type of content, those past couple of weeks back to back like that was just horrific and traumatizing. So how can we heal from this? So let's talk about the transformation. What's going on, Featherlight? How are you?
Namaste, namaste.
Oh, namaste. How can I forget to say namaste, namaste? Because you bring the peace in and the namaste in.
Yes, the divine in me honors the divine in you. Always.
Indeed. The divine in me honors the divine in you. And you help bring me back to where I should be, at a calm, even keel, because I just, being an Aries, I'm just so fiery, and you know, I just buck up with my horns, and so I have to learn how to calm down and express myself in a calm and cool, collected manner.
Exactly. Don't let someone else control your energy.
That's right. So, also, I'm going to talk about just some little hot topics that we'll touch on tonight. Let's see. My boy Julian Assange with WikiLeaks dropped some emails, like 20,000 emails from the DNC on how the DNC essentially sabotaged Bernie Sanders' campaign. And then that crooked-ass Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who voted for, who's a supporter of, an advocate of those payday lending loan places that a lot of people with struggling incomes turn to for loans. Exactly. And then you have like these payments that are like exorbitant and extortion, really. And so this is what she wants to keep in our neighborhoods. I'm sick of these people sitting up here pretending like they're quote-unquote Democrats, which is really nothing but just a political party, just like the Republican Party and anything else, they're all the same.
Yeah.
But to sit same here and family. Try to... Yeah, exactly. I have more respect for people like Donald Trump or any of those Republicans more so than I have for somebody like some of these Democrats faking like they really care about people and,
right.
and all this craziness. Give me a break. Anyway, so she had to resign because of the email leaks, because she mm-hmm. was the head of the DNC. But guess mm-hmm. who turned around and hired her? Hillary Clinton. So now how do you, as a Democratic nominee, making history as of last night, being nominated as the first female as a presidential nominee and all of this crap.
Yeah.
And then you turn around and hire the person that had to resign for corruption. What does that tell
exactly,
you?
Exactly. Exactly. What does that say about you?
I mean, do we need to, like, really break you down so you can understand why
you don't understand the words coming out of my mouth?
Okay? God, I mean, what do... I mean, how... What do people have to do to man around so you can get it? Damn, sign language, pigeon. What method of communication will work?
Because ding, ding, English, ding, 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 ding.
The simple stuff, English pictures and videos not working. And text and documents, that shit ain't working. So... I mean, you know, what else, what other methods do you need? Yeah, so maybe we can come up with that. Jesus Christ.
My sister sent me this text today, and she said, no conviction for those in the Eric Garner case. So I was like, okay.
Freddie Gray case.
So, Freddie Gray.
Mm-hmm.
It's so many. Yes, Freddie Gray.
Yes,
We send each other these little pictures, these little cute pictures back and forth.
Me? Oh.
And, oh, the
Bitmo.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found one with somebody with a glove, like a boxing glove, and mm-hmm. it's like the spring kind, you know, like boom, boom, you know, that kind, and it just shows the boxing glove just whopping somebody upside their head, and you see all these stars and everything. So mm-hmm. I sent her that, and I said, the glove is to all black people. Like, pow, you thought you won that one. Pow, nope. So it's like glove. It's like hit after hit after hit after hit. It's entertainment for them. It's like, let's just go through the procedure, waste the taxpayers' money. We all know mm-hmm. how this is going to turn out. And da, da, da. Oh, they're not afraid of any riots anymore. You know, they just do it.
Yeah, they've been studying the protests, and mm-hmm. you know, that's pretty much what people would do, which is great, because it brings attention to the cause. And speaking of which, I know there's been quite a bit of talk around different groups that are organizing, as well as different celebrities that have come out. They have begun to speak out. They've even put together some little video collages and all. So thank you for speaking out, those that have spoken out. I know Talib Kweli, who I've always liked, he's been very, very vocal on Black Twitter for years. So many of these quote-unquote celebrities have been coming out. But hey, guess who came out and did a little donation? Michael Jordan finally came out of the woodworks and donated $1 million to the NAACP.
NAACP, all the work they do.
Yeah.
All the work they do. I hadn't heard a peep from them doing this whole time.
They've been giving statements and saying whatnot and sending texts on my darn phone. Yeah. Anyway, so I want to get on that. We'd like to touch on that, as well as the mothers of gun violence, they spoke at the DNC, telling y'all to go vote for Hillary Clinton because she sat down and, you know, she talked to them, finally. So, but for right now, before we go to break, Johnson & Johnson has finally been revealed. That Johnson & Johnson, which we knew anyway, was a company that was sued because of the talcum powder causing ovarian cancer. So I want to share this clip with everyone because even if you're not a woman, you know a woman, you either date one, married to one, you come from a mother, you have sisters or nieces, aunts, share this with every woman you know, and men too, because if it's causing ovarian cancer in women, who's to say that it's not causing some colon or prostate cancers with men or some type of or something, because it's apparently harmful once it enters
to the body.
The body.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
So
yes.
Let's listen to this Johnson & Johnson cover up and listen to what the man says. The commentator, he's speaking about this. I believe he's an investigative environmental lawyer. And he speaks about how in the 1990s, Johnson & Johnson's sales decreased because, I surmise, more people began to find out about the harmful effects of the talcum powder. So then what Johnson & Johnson set out to do is continue marketing this Johnson & Johnson's baby powder to African American and Latino women and women of low income.
What?
So they specifically began to market, even though they knew that this powder was causing ovarian cancer. So what are we going to do? Let's listen to this. Okay.
We're learning more and more about the dangers of Johnson & Johnson's talcum powder, and the latest news is that the company was specifically marketing the product towards lower-income Americans. Now, the talcum powder in the company's products has been linked to ovarian cancer in women, and the company knew about this. So let's check in with attorney David Haynes to discuss the Johnson & Johnson talcum powder lawsuits. So, David, this talcum powder story with Johnson & Johnson, it's been out for about 6 months now, but it absolutely is not getting the kind of coverage that it deserves. Many people out there have no idea that this talcum powder or talcum-based products from Johnson & Johnson have been linked to cancer. We've had two court rulings in favor of plaintiffs on this issue. Give us a rundown of what we now know about Johnson & Johnson's talcum powder products.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the most well-known household products, of course, that people have been familiar with for decades, if not generations, such as shower to shower and the Johnson baby powder products. A lot of women are using this. A lot of women are using this for, you know, feminine hygiene issues, other just regular use. Talc is a mineral which actually contains magnesium, sulfate, and oxygen, and also includes asbestos, but it was always thought to not be cancer-causing agent. But as it turns out, Johnson & Johnson has had knowledge for decades of these concerns and the link between talcum powder, their specific product that they were marketing as incredibly safe and good for everyone. And they've known about the link between talc and cancer, but they have never made it public, and they've never made their consumer aware of the potential risk, and there have been no warnings on the product. So as some studies have begun to come out, and they're showing a very direct link between the use of talcum powder and ovarian cancer, and that the risk for those women who are using it for a genital application is the ovarian cancer's risk is increased by about 40%. And so we have, you know, tens of thousands of cases a year of women who have ovarian cancer. If they're talcum powder users, it very well may have been caused by this product and they're not aware of it.
And, you know, what is so frightening about this issue is, you know, essentially from birth, I think everybody who's had a child, you know, in the last 30 years has probably at some point had a bottle of Johnson & Johnson baby powder in their home. And so, you know, we start putting this on children, you know, young girls and young boys, from the day they're born almost. And so then they grow up, you know, they continue to use it in different forms. And as you said, it's not just through, you know, for feminine hygiene. It's general use. If you put it under your arms, if you use it, you know, anywhere where you feel you need it, it still increases the risk of cancer by 30% for regular use, and by 40%, as you pointed out, when used as a feminine hygiene product. So, you know, this is essentially not safe at all, really, for any kind of use, because it's going to increase your risk of cancer. And that's what we're finding out now. And that, as I'm to believe, is what the juries agreed with.
Yeah, that's true. And obviously, consumers need to make a risk-benefit analysis. And when you're looking at what the potential benefit is from talcum powder, which is a potentially a comfort sort of issue to reduce sweating and chafing and things like that, versus the risk, which is cancer, and, you know, which can, of course, be fatal, consumers need to have that information so that they can make that analysis on their own. And many experts, of course, are coming out with their advice, which is simply don't use it, because the benefits certainly don't even begin to outweigh the potential risk. And as you talk about using it from birth, I mean, we use this on both of my daughters when they were young as well, and not knowing, but the fibers from the talc can travel up through the uterus and into the ovaries, where it causes ovarian cancer. So very disconcerting. You look at some of the marketing tactics potentially that are very concerning as well. They had a drop in sales in the early 90s at Johnson & Johnson, and began to market this specifically to African American and Latino populations of women, believing that they were, you know, a better source for marketing this. It is very popular among African American women to use as well. And so, as the memos and the internal documents from Johnson & Johnson have come to the light of day, we've had sunshine shined on this in these two cases. We've had two very significant verdicts around the country, both of which included very large punitive damages claims, at which the jury, both times have been upset clearly at what Johnson & Johnson knew and failed to reveal to these plaintiffs and to the public at large. And so we've had the first verdict of $72 million, $62 million of which was punitive damages, and the second verdict was $55 million, $50 million of which was punitive damages, and the jury certainly didn't return those verdicts lightly. Those are pretty extraordinary results, and they're based upon this very large, sophisticated company, Johnson & Johnson, not sharing the information because they don't want to put warnings on the bottles.
And it is interesting. I mean, we're looking at, I think there's at least 1,200 more lawsuits against the company that have already been filed. And when we talk about the fact that tens of thousands of women every year develop ovarian cancer, and some of them may not know about the link between the use of powder. And then we get into, as you just pointed out, the marketing of it. I mean, Johnson & Johnson, when they ramped up this marketing towards African-American and Latino women, they knew at that time, correct me if I'm wrong, but they knew at that time that it was linked to cancer.
Yes, they have had this information. They're the experts, of course. It's their product. Johnson & Johnson is a huge company. It seems like, you know, we're regularly talking about that particular company with defective products that are on the market, unfortunately, and their safety culture there internally with their scientists and their epidemiologists at Johnson & Johnson. They really need to be taking a look at that. They've known of this information for decades. It preceded this marketing blitz to the African-American community in the 1990s. Yet they've concealed it because if this information comes out, of course, sales will be drastically affected. And this is a cash cow for Johnson & Johnson. It's a very serious issue. Obviously, 20,000 women diagnosed annually with ovarian cancer, and over 15,000 women die annually from ovarian cancer. And, you know, still the information is not out there to the public that this, in fact, could have been the cause of their cancer or their loved one's cancer. It's very sad.
Is there anything that we know about the biopersistence of talcum powder? For example, if a woman had used it but she stopped using it 5-10 years ago, does the risk decrease or does it kind of accumulate? Essentially, what do women need to know, and do they need to go get checked out, and how often should they be checked out? Do we know anything about that?
Yes, I think the answer is that we're now getting some initial scientific studies that are in. A lot more studies do need to be done. We are establishing the link. I think that the science is showing that long-term users are definitely at greater risk. As we talked about, there's a slightly elevated risk as well for those women who are using it for more of a feminine application. But more information is known. If you have been a long-term user of baby powder, you certainly may wish to consult with your physician about what risk you might be subject to and testing that could potentially be done. Of course, genetic factors and other predispositions for cancer are always an issue. As we look at these situations, the main thing is that consumers need to have the information so that they can make an informed choice for themselves and their family, their children, and their babies as to whether or not they want to use what is, you know, seems like a harmless product, but in fact is a mineral which contains magnesium and asbestos on their application and on their naked body. This is something that consumers have the right to know about, and these large medical companies do not have a right to conceal the information that they have internally.
Exactly, and as we've often discussed, it's not the fact that a product does something bad, it's that the company knew about it and made the conscious decision to not inform people, to not warn people, to not change their practices or their product. And that's when they run into legal trouble, is when they know about a problem, they do not inform people, and they let them continue to be injured. David Haynes, this exact reason is why people like you are out there every day fighting these fights, holding corporations accountable, and seeking justice for those that have been harmed. So we appreciate everything you do.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium. The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
You got to. I'm here to tell you that the only way you're going to stop police brutality is you got to stand up and be brutal with this damn beast. You got to step to this cracker or it will never stop. You can moan, you can groan, you can sing, you can pray. You can recite, you can claim you know all the Quran, Old Testament, all the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament, the Quran from Al-Fatiha to Al-Nas. You can know all the Medunetah. You can know Maya, truth, justice, righteousness, harmony, balance, order, reciprocity. You can name those of the Netter system. You can go and study the Odu text and substantiate your position according to Odu. You can study the Ifa, or the Word, or the Akan, or the Yoruba, and run through the pantheon of the Orisha. You can call on Oludumare. You can call on Ilegba, and Shango, and Obatula, and Oshun, and Ogun, and Yemonya. You can know all of that. But unless you're willing to stand up and step to this white man, we will never get out of this condition.
All right, and that was Brother Khalid Muhammad speaking about police brutality, speaking of which, the last three officers in the Fred Gray case will not be charged. Charges have been dropped, according to Prosecutor Marilyn Mosby in Baltimore. Welcome back to the Lotus Place. You can call in 641-715-3660, and the host code is 54903. Press pound, And welcome back, Feather Light, and welcome in, Delta.
Hey. Welcome, welcome. How everybody doing tonight?
Hi, Delta.
Oh, fine, fine.
How are you? How are you?
I am doing just great.
Good. How's Papa doing?
Grouchy is the H.
As the what? As the what? As the H.
Let's move on to something else, girl.
Delta, you have some hot topics for us tonight. What's going on in the world?
Girl, I got some great hot topics. You know what's the most saddest part of all? Is this us on tonight? Is Icy Hot on?
Icy Hot had made it on. You know, Icy Hot may be working on her Women United project. She may call in and give us an update.
Okay, well, I got two cases coming out of Florida.
Okay.
Two cases coming out of Florida. Now, y'all know, sometimes it's just sad. Well, no, not coming out of Florida. We got one coming out of Florida. That one, they're coming out of D.C. Okay. This preacher down in Florida, his name is Reverend Taylor, and he put on he had this committee at his church that he goes around and he take in all the homeless and all the disadvantaged women and boys and girls. Come to find out, the preacher started pimping the women and turned them into sex slaves. Yes, down in Florida. And I hate to say it, he looked just like us. And he took these poor women,
my goodness,
who was already stressed out, and he took them and started having sex with himself, then turned them on and turned them into sex slaves. And one of the women got so tired of the preacher, what he was doing, and she was so disgusted with it. She called the law, and the preacher was arrested for, I can't use that word, like improperly holding people, what do you call that, against their will, and he had turned them into sex slaves. The preacher did all this.
The preacher.
Just like, you know what, just like Brother Brown said, they be up there getting your money and telling you to pay all that money. And them ain't nothing but pimp daddy preachers.
A lot of them come from the streets. A lot of them come straight from the streets, and they have a game with words.
They have a gift of gab
and a way with women.
Yes, indeed.
And he tucked those women and held them against their will. And come to find out, once they arrested him.
Oh, he did worse than this wasn't. I mean, he held them completely against their will.
Completely against their will, they said. Then once they arrested the preacher was arrested. The preacher had been sent once before for doing the same thing.
Oh my goodness!
Now you know what? Now I got to, I must say, some people I don't feel sorry for, and you know me, Black Rose, I told you, some things we must have to speak out the truth on. And this is one thing we're speaking out the truth on. This is the truth. When they wrong, they wrong. He need to be put under the jail, because if you don't been a preacher and been done this before, and you get right back out and you did the same thing, it's just no rehabilitation for him. And I believe in forgiveness, but come on now, let's be for real. Yeah. Okay, now listen.
He's supposed to be a man of the cloth.
I mean, you absolutely correct. He's a man between the legs, girl. That's what he
yes,
is.
He is. And all like that there.
Oh, yes. And then, let me tell you about my hot case that happened here in my little city.
Oh, okay.
I just thought about it. We had
not
a breaking news.
Not in Mississippi.
It's hot. It's so hot in Mississippi. It's blowing. Well, we had this transvestite. They call her a trans. She came from Hattiesburg, Mississippi, which is about an hour and 20 minutes, I'll say.
Okay.
She came down. They had a black rodeo this past weekend, and we have been. The Navy base over in Biloxi, Mississippi, which is Biloxi, about 20 minutes away from me. And the transgender came down to the black rodeo.
Oh.
They had a young black man who was in service. He was in the Navy. The transvestite made a date, and him and her hooked up. She's looking like a woman.
Uh-huh.
I guess she tricked him. This is what everybody's assuming. Because they got a room and went to the hotel. And I guess when he got to the room and found out the penis was bigger than his, he took out a knife and began to stab the transgender.
Oh,
but I must say to the young man's defense, now, somebody may not like this. But
oh,
I must say to the young man, you ain't had no business going down there at no hotel and going online. This is what alleged by the police. Going online and setting up a date, and you looking just like a woman, and you get down there to that hotel, and your dick big as mine.
Oh,
when
Lord,
we get ready to have sex, let's keep it
that.
Real. Let's keep it real. Your dick big as mine. And I'm freaking out.
Oh,
and I pull a knife out and stab you.
Oh, my Lord.
You've done that to yourself. Because
Because
you should have told him the truth. And 12 men can't get over that. Now they're down here having a big rallies and camera lights and all this going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I bet
oh, is she dead?
One. Huh?
Did he kill her?
He'd kill her dead. It's a dough nail laying up in a coffin.
Oh. Mm.
But what I'm saying is I must come to his defense, and a lot of more people are coming to his defense. Because we bet 2-1 the young man was in the Navy and was going to go out and get him a little piece of coochie and go back to the ship and come to find out he had somebody down there with a penis big as his. And he freaked out and he killed her.
I don't think he should have killed the woman. He may have freaked out. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what, you know, if I was a man and that happened to me. But, oh, my God, I just think that's horrible, though, for these transvestites to be
but
murdered.
But we must
but
say
time,
now. Okay,
yeah, I don't think anybody has the right to take anybody else's
and
life.
They defense is you must tell people the truth. Don't leave people on. Be for real.
Yeah,
how
I
many people
out
there
tell.
Have lied, though? They don't mean that their life needs to be taken away.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Hear me good. I'm not saying that's what his life need. Hear me good. I'm not saying that's what his life need to be taken away. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is he put himself in that situation because he didn't know how the young man was going to react. And the young man is 20 and he's 25 and he didn't tell the man the truth. Because if you look at the young man, the young transgender, he looked just like a woman.
Yeah.
And a very attractive woman. And he should have told them the truth because I know a transgender. I have reached out to her, trying to get her to come on our show. And if you see this thing, there's no way.
Oh, it's not a thing, Delta.
No, Delta. That's a human being. Ooh,
okay,
come on, Christian.
Well, Michael, whatever you want to call herself. Mm-hmm. When you see this boy.
Person.
When you see this boy, this young man, he looked just like a woman. Now, he went and had his titties done. He had some. This is true. He had the titties done.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them do.
And then he had his waist. He had his waist done, around his waist. His waist is done. And he had the hips done.
Okay.
But he said he hadn't made the step yet to get the penis off. And he is the young man on my Facebook page. And he says that he's a very pretty young man. So people can get to see, because if you look at her, everybody think the man is a woman. You don't see no manly about him until he's trying to change his little voice. You really can't see no manly about him. None whatsoever. So what I'm saying is what happened was, he probably tricked the young man and didn't tell the young man the truth. And see, some people can't handle that. That's what I'm saying. And the young man freaked. That's just my opinion now.
Okay. Now, let me add another flavor, because I do know, not that I frequent these sites, but I do read, and there are transgender.
You
people.
Can just call them trans.
Yeah, some trannies use certain sites to attract certain people. And it is known by these people, not to say it was in this particular case, but it is known by these people who go on these sites that these are transvestites. Some men actually are turned on by this type of individual. We do know some stars, I'm not going to call any names, who have frequented with these people, and they like it and they enjoy it. Now, I'm not saying that this guy went on this particular site and posted, you know, his you know, desires or what have you, but I do know that they do have certain sites, and these are the sites that they frequent, and there are some men who frequent these sites knowing that these are transvestites. Now, evidently this guy was freaked out, but I still, what is he doing with the knife? This, you know, that's another story, but he freaked out, and I just really don't think that he should have killed the person. That's just my opinion. I don't think he should have taken his life.
Yeah,
I'm not saying his life shouldn't have been taken. I agree with you.
Only thing I'm saying, I agree with you 100% that his life shouldn't have been taken. I'm saying is, a lot of times they don't tell them the truth.
They should tell. I will say this, because if I was out with a man, person I thought was a man, then all of a sudden they don't, like Delta said, they pull out something bigger than mine. Well, they don't even have anything to pull out, per se.
Right.
And, you know, I would be very upset too. And so I think that people should, maybe
just
that's
be honest, telling the truth,
really,
because you
have,
got some.
You know, tell the truth. Let a person know in order to prevent all of this, so the person won't get upset. Yes, and come back and try to kill you. Let a person know. Listen, I don't know if you know or not. I am a man. I am a woman.
Right.
So.
Right. Is that going to be a problem?
Because, listen, you got some people want to get freaky.
Yeah. Don't be mad because you like being freaky like that.
That's right.
Yeah. Don't be mad and want to kill somebody now because you got turned on.
Yeah, you want to get freaky.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and
yeah,
you know, and another thing about one more thing, Dr. Cooper, and I love this. Thank you so much. One more thing about this is that he freaked out because he found out who she really was. She really was. But also part of that freaking out is what you just said. He was upset with himself because he was turned on by a man, and that infuriated him.
Right.
Even though he
some
thought it was
people
a woman,
lashed
out because of that.
Yeah, but if you see, I'm gonna send y'all the picture. But if you see her, this is what I'm saying. That's why I'm even calling her she. If you see the young man, he do not look like no man.
Yeah,
well,
I know.
I've seen a lot of them. They look beautiful. I've seen. I promise you, they look better than some women I've seen.
Oh
yes,
I've seen them up close.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then
yes.
The man said, because see, the news people said they met up for a rendezvous.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is they met up. Because I guess they looked at the texts and different things they were sending back to the father. So they the news people said they met up for a rendezvous. And so that's what I'm saying is probably what happened. They met up and that man didn't tell him the truth. And see them. See, this is the truth. See, some men take you there, and I know the transvestite that be on my page. She says, "I give head all day long." And see, some people may give head, but then after a while, some men want to go all the way,
mm-hmm.
and that's probably what happened. He probably gonna give head, and that was gonna be the end of it. But this what happened was, think about it, and then the man wanted to go all the way,
right?
And realize, okay, this is not, you know, not what it is.
Mm-hmm. This is a woman. I mean, this is not a woman. This is a man. Oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's all I'm saying.
Well, there have been several transvestite killings recently, and I know the Black Lives Matter has started, well, not has started, but they picked that up as part of their protest as well, bring it out to the forefront how so many of these, in particularly people of color, people of, what is, how do they say it? Trans people of color, yeah. Trans
mm-hmm.
people of color have been discriminated against so viciously, because you know, and I never thought about this. And this is one thing that garnered a lot of sympathy from me for them, for that group of people, because I did not think about it. But like a lot of people, when they decide that they want to transition and take on another gender's look and lifestyle. So, say, for instance, they are working a regular job or living in a regular apartment complex. All of a sudden, they've changed their look. And so they have to suffer from discrimination on the job. They're often fired or terminated because it's just too much drama and confusion going on according to the workplace. You know, because a lot of times they want to take on, they don't want you to call them Mike. Will now be called Michelle and things
right.
like this, and then you have people again that have an issue with transgender people,
yes.
and then many of the people that are renting, if it's a private renter, they can discriminate against them. They can find reasons, and Delta, you might can speak on that. What would you do, Delta? If that's a good question for you, Delta. Now, you being a property owner, if you had a transgender person. Well, let's put it in two ways. So if you have
right.
a man that came and rented from you, and all of a sudden he transitions into a woman, would you continue leasing your property to him or what? Would you have
Yes, I would, because now I am this away, and I must say a dollar bill is a dollar bill. And when you're a business owner, you don't care how you make your money, long as you make it honest. And this is my philosophy, and this have always been my philosophy. I do not care. Like some people say, okay, you're gonna rent to a bunch of these people, or whatever. I'm giving a parable, and you have a lot of people may move in. I don't care, as long as you don't tear my house up. So whatever they do over there in their house, it's their business. Long as they take care of my property and pay their rent, I don't have anything to do with it. Two young ladies, less than young ladies, came to rent my house. And I was going to rent it to them. I have nothing to do with their lifestyle. I may not like it, but I'm not going to discriminate from renting from them. They may be the best renters I ever have. I wouldn't do that. No, I don't believe in
so
that.
So you would go ahead on, you would go ahead on and continue renting.
I would go ahead on and rent to them and be throwing holy oil on the ground all at the same time. they won't know it.
Like you said about the gay people, you would bake them a cake, but you'd be praying over the cake.
I'd be praying over the whole time.
Lord, have mercy. I heard
telling
that Delta.
Telling God to save. Well, now listen, y'all, we got another major problem going around. It's been all over the news and all on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot of white people. Well, not all. I said a lot. And no, let me back up. I just got to tell y'all about this hot topic. The story I sent you, Black Rose, in South Carolina, where the grandmother was home with her two kids in South Carolina. She was home with her three grandchildren, because they said two of the children escaped. With her three grandchildren, a white young man, 23 years old, and his white girlfriend broke into the house and stabbed them and killed them because they was black. You hadn't heard anything on the TV about this case. And they said
she didn't until you told me about it, and then I had to look it up.
And it is a hate crime.
Where is this?
In South Carolina.
Hmm.
And they deliberately targeted them. They deliberately targeted them. The police said they were deliberately targeted. And the police said they were deliberately killed because of their race.
Mm.
Now, what do you think should be done about
that? I can't
believe
the police
did it. Why is the media is not pushing this story?
They don't want to push hate crimes against black people. That would not go over too well. They don't ever push hate crimes against black people.
Yeah, that's kept pretty quiet.
The guy who shot up all those.
Go ahead,
Shannon. No, you go.
I was just about to say, I remember that case with those white people, I think somewhere in old Cleveland. See, that's why I don't care for Cleveland. I don't know why LeBron went back there. But anyway, I think this was a case in Cleveland right around when those women were being held. In that other man's home, Castro, whatever his name was, Castro. Those people, it was some old, broke-down, crazy-looking, mess-head-looking white people, had kidnapped this black lady and was making her eat rat feces and drink their urine and all kinds of stuff. And they plucked her hair out and just all kinds of things they did to her, tortured her, but she was able to escape. And that story was in the news maybe for one news cycle, and that was it. I didn't hear much about it after that. I didn't hear too much about it, but yeah, Delta, I didn't see that. It has not like popped up in my news feed, anything like that. I had to search for the story after you shared it with me.
And it's a true story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then we have another major problem going around. And let me do one more hot topic after this, and I must do this one, y'all. Let me do this one first. Because we need to let our community know, in the black community, what is going on. Okay, there are white people who are seeing black men walking by themselves. They are beginning to call the police and tell the police that these black men have guns.
Mm-hmm.
And when the police is pull up, they are pulling guns on the young men,
mm-hmm.
and handcuffing them. And the police said it is a epidemic problem that's going on. They are calling, and when they see a black man by themselves, they deliberately calling and giving a false report and having the police rush there with guns.
Exactly. Yeah, like with Tamir Rice.
Yeah.
And like with the little Indian man that was walking down the street.
But this to me trying to start a race law. This is what this is.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, I agree with you on that, and I would also add that we're already in a race war. But let's take a break, and let's come back, and
I got one more, and that'll be the end of it, if you don't mind.
Okay, we'll come back.
I say the best one for last.
All right, you say the best for last, and then I want to play Marilyn Mosby's statement after at her press conference. Speaking about not charging the remaining officers who somehow were centered around the whole arrest and death of Freddie Gray. But we'll be back, and you are listening to The Lotus.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Tell him not a writer.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'm awake.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Hi, welcome to this segment of Your Black World News. I'm your host, Roosevelt Mitchell III. Christopher Ladeh was arrested at his job less than a day after he posted the video of Alton Sterling being killed by police. Police showed up at Dobbins Air Force Base and took him into custody for allegedly assault and battery. Ladeh's lawyer, Tiffany Simmons, said the charges are trumped up and are false, says he never had a warrant for assault, has no criminal history, and they never produced a warrant for the assault, but still held him in the DeKalb County Jail for at least 26 hours. When his lawyer asked to see the warrant for his arrest, the police failed to come up with one. She was told that he was being held for unresolved traffic tickets. Delay paid the tickets and attempted to go back to work, but he was not allowed on the base due to security clearance issues. He had only been on the job for 6 weeks and says that his supervisor knew about the tickets at the time he was hired. So Ladeh had been working at the Air Force Base for 6 weeks with the same unresolved parking tickets. And less than a day after he posted the video, the police show up at his job, arrest him for assault with no warrant, and ultimately find that he owes traffic tickets. Coincidence or was he targeted? I would love to hear what you think about this, so please leave a comment in the section below.
It's a lifestyle that I live, you know, and sometimes you're flush, and then when you believe in something, you're not, and then you have to wait to get it back. Then you flush again, and hopefully you double up, you flip.
All right, and so as we can see now, you can't even post a video of some incriminating evidence like that, I guess. That's just ridiculous. And let me share this quickly. And I know Delta has another story for us, but just speaking on that whole video and that clip and what the young man is having to experience, the harassment, not even being able to continue gainful employment because of him posting a video, that's insane. And in North Carolina has passed a law that we cannot see the police video footage. So even if they do have the darn cameras on them, like when everybody was saying, oh, we need police cameras, even with the police cameras, they don't want to let you see the video. And even when we do see it, what's done? Nothing still. Nothing at all. So anyway, Delta, what's up? You have another hot topic for us?
Yes, I do. Now, y'all, some people, I hate to say it, need to be, how that old saying said, the Bible said you need to be fought with many stripes. Now, we got some people who really need to be fought. And we got one lady, I hate to say it. She's in Washington, D.C. Y'all, she not only need to be fought with many stripes. Me, you, Black Rose, and Feather Light, we need to get us a plane ticket and fly to D.C. with baseball bets.
Uh-oh.
And I must say, I hate to inform y'all, she looked just like us. But we need to give her one good old-fashioned slave beating. And let me tell you why. Sometimes we just got to call it like we see it. That's why they call Delta Cougar, and I get these hot topics. Okay, we have this mother. She's 44. Her boyfriend is 38. The mother said she was looking for love, and there's nothing wrong with looking for love. Everybody wants to be loved. Everybody wants to be loved. There's nothing wrong with being loved. So she met this man, and she was so fascinated with this man. And y'all, he ain't no prize catch. You can Google it. And the mother, the man told the mother, listen at what he told the mother to do. The man told the mother to molest her 2-year-old daughter. Let me say it again. The man told the mother to molest her 2-year-old daughter. The mother molested the daughter and videoed it. Did you hear me? Made a video. This mother is 44 years old.
She must have some kind of mental issues.
No, she don't have no mental issues. This is what she said. This was her answer she gave. She's gone to prison for 5 years, which that wench need to not go for 5. She need to go for 55. And she made a statement with her lawyer, and she said she was lonely and really looking for love, and her boyfriend knew it. And that's why she did what she did, to give him what he wanted, because she only wanted to be loved. What kind of mess do you think of that? Do you think 5 years is just going to prison for molesting your 2-year-old daughter and videoing it and sending it to your boyfriend? So do you think 5 years is long enough? What do you think, Feather Light? What do you think, Black Rose?
Feather Light jumped off the line for a second, but I'll tell you what I think. I think if she does, if she only has to serve 5 years, I would hope that those will be the worst 5 years of her life, and I would pray that she is tormented every single day of those 5 years, and I mean torment her, because that's just horrible, that's unbelievable. Is evil, and I hope that somebody beat her ass and rape her religiously in prison. That's what I think.
She said she done it because she just wanted to be loved.
Well, you know what? I take that back, because I'm supposed to be trying to be peaceful. Okay, so what I say, let me take it back, Delta. Let me just take that. Let me walk it back a little bit. I don't know, because the woman, something's got to be really twisted with her. So I don't know if the woman just needs to go to some type of psychiatric ward, or if prison is actually the right place for her. I know you would go for prison for her, Delta, and like you said, bring the bats out. I don't know. I think prison, yeah, and then also there's something wrong with that woman too. And I would like to bring the best out on her also.
Yeah. Something's just not right for you as a mother
to
take your 2-year-old child and do sex acts to her, then turn around and film it.
And then where's this boyfriend?
He was in another part of, in another state. And they sent these movies they made by Facebook. And that's how the nitwit got caught. They was distributing it to other people.
So so well that's the distribution of child pornography, so he should have been arrested also.
But you got some you got some evil people in this world.
Yeah.
And you got some women are so stupid. They'll know they man molesting their child and won't do anything about it.
Won't do anything about it. Not a thing. Whew, my goodness. Delta, I know people want to kind of talk about Freddie Gray. So do you want to share any thoughts on Freddie Gray's case before I play this clip on Marilyn Mosby, the prosecutor?
Shame on her. I did not find out until today that she dropped the charges. I don't know that she dropped the charges against all the other remaining or just certain ones.
No, all three of the remaining officers. So the three that have gone to court, they were able to beat the charge. One was a mistrial. And these last three that haven't gone to court, the charges have been dropped. So let me just play this. Now, I remember, do you recall, Minister Darren Muhammad from there in Baltimore, and he said from the beginning, do not be bewildered by these little brash statements of Marilyn Mosby. None of these officers will serve time. None of them. They're going to walk through this trial quickly and be done with it and get it out of the way, and no one will be charged. And that is exactly what happened. And I distinctly recall him saying, just speaking about how she came out so confident, and we were all like, "Ooh, she's on trial. Oh, yes. Oh, praise the Lord." And then now you have some legal eagles, some other lawyers who have criticized the handling of this case, the way in which she handled it. But if you listen to, and if you listen to her statement, she's speaking about some ways that police corruption even was woven into this whole investigation, because the police were investigating themselves. So let's listen to Marilyn Mosby speaking about no charges.
Thank you all for being here today. Baltimore finds itself at the epicenter of a national conflict between urban and rural populations of color and the law enforcement agencies that are sworn to protect and serve them. It is a struggle that strikes at the basic ideas of self-determination, justice, equality, and sadly, humanity in America. However fitting it is for observers to use the untimely death of Freddie Carlos Gray Jr. as a barometer of our nation's progress on police brutality, my professional role in this matter is plain: to seek justice on behalf of an innocent 25-year-old man who was unreasonably taken into custody after fleeing in his neighborhood, which just happens to be a high-crime neighborhood, and had his spine partially severed in the back of a Baltimore police wagon. As the chief prosecutor for Baltimore City, I took an oath to uphold justice and to treat every individual within my jurisdiction equally and fairly under the law. I take my oath very seriously. Since the start of my administration, we have been and continue to be wholly committed to creating a fair and equitable justice system for all and holding people accountable for crimes that they commit regardless of age, race, color, sex, creed, socioeconomic status, or in this case, occupation. As a chief prosecutor elected by the people of Baltimore City, I made a promise that my prosecutors and I will never cower from our obligation to prosecute crimes where we believe that we have probable cause that a crime was committed. We're sworn to not only uphold the law and hold violent repeat offenders accountable, but we're also sworn to apply justice fairly and equally to everyone, even those that take an oath to protect and serve our communities. As prosecutors, we are servants of all victims and witnesses of crime in Baltimore City, and we fight each and every day to ensure that perpetrators of crime see their day in court and are held accountable for their actions or inactions where there's a relational duty that requires such. We never cowered in our battle for justice for 16-year-old Felicia Barnes, 1-year-old Carter Scott, bicyclist and loving father Thomas Palermo, or Shatia Lansdowne and the various other sexual assault survivors of Nelson Clifford. As I previously stated, the decision to prosecute 6 police officers was not and has never been an indictment on the entire Baltimore Police Department. Although some have tried to invalidate my family's longstanding service as public officers, I know firsthand the sacrifices, the dedication, the commitment it takes to protect and serve our communities. For those that believe that I'm anti-police, it's simply not the case. I'm anti-police brutality, and I need not remind you that the only loss and the greatest loss in all of this was that of Freddie Gray's life. For over a year, my office has been forced to remain silent on all 6 of the cases pertaining to and surrounding the death of Freddie Gray, despite being physically and professionally threatened, mocked, ridiculed, harassed, and even sued. We've respected and fulfilled our obligation in dutiful silence in accordance with Judge Barry Williams' gag order, restricting any commentary from the state. In accordance with my oath to pursue justice over convictions, I've refused to allow the grandstanding of some and the hyperbole of others to diminish our resolve to seek justice on behalf of this young man. I was elected the prosecutor. I signed up for this, and I can take it. Because no matter how problematic and troublesome it has been for my office, my prosecutors, my family, and me personally, it pales in comparison to what mothers and fathers all across this country, specifically Freddie Gray's mother, Gloria Darden, or Richard Shipley, Freddie Gray's stepfather, goes through on a daily basis, knowing their son's mere decision to run from the police proved to be a lethal one. Please know that even though the media has made this about everything but the untimely death of your son, my office has never wavered in our commitment to seeking justice on his behalf. My team of prosecutors, led by 2 highly respected veteran attorneys, Chief Deputy Michael Schatzow, Deputy State's Attorney Janice Bledsoe, right here, and Assistant State's Attorney John Butler, Matt Pillion, Sarah Akhtar, Law Clerk Michael Fiorenza, have devoted countless hours and made countless sacrifices to ensure accountability on your son's behalf. I'm extremely proud of my team, who never lost sight of why we were fighting so hard, your son. As the world has witnessed over the past 14 months, the prosecution of on-duty police officers in this country is unsurprisingly rare and blatantly fraught with systemic and inherent complications.
Yes, it is.
Unlike with other cases, where prosecutors work closely with the police to investigate what actually occurred, what we realized very early on in this case was that police investigating police, whether they're friends or merely their colleagues, was problematic.
That's right. That's right.
There was a reluctance and an obvious bias that was consistently exemplified not by the entire Baltimore Police Department, but by individuals within the Baltimore Police Department at every stage of the investigation, which became blatantly apparent in the subsequent trials. Although Commissioner Davis was and has been extremely accommodating, there were individual police officers that were witnesses to the case, yet were part of the investigative team. Interrogations that were conducted without asking the most poignant questions. Lead detectives that were completely uncooperative and started a counter-investigation to disprove the state's case by not executing search warrants pertaining to text messages among the police officers involved in the case, creating videos to disprove the state's case without our knowledge, creating notes that were drafted after the case was launched to contradict the medical examiner's conclusion, turning these notes over to defense attorneys months prior to turning them over to the state, and yet doing it in the middle of trial. As you can see, whether investigating, interrogating, testifying, cooperating, or even complying with the state, we've all bore witness to an inherent bias that is a direct result of when police police themselves. And despite the challenges of not having an independent investigatory agency to work with us throughout this prosecution, we still are grateful for the opportunity to show the world the reality of the justice system from start to finish. At every step of the way, due process was afforded all of these officers, and the legitimacy of our prosecution efforts were affirmed time and time again. They were affirmed when the court commissioner signed off on the charges that we filed. They were yet again affirmed when we presented our case before a grand jury and secured indictments against all six officers in every charge that we presented to them. Our legal arguments, theories, strategies were affirmed not only in 135 motions in which we successfully overcame, but also in the state's highest court, where we battled and ultimately prevailed in compelling the officers to testify against each other. The legitimacy of these charges were even affirmed by the judge after he rejected 13 motions for dismissal and denied 22 motions for judgment of acquittal throughout all four trials. As prosecutors, we are ministers of justice, and it is our ethical obligation to always seek justice over conviction. Yes, as prosecutors, we do not determine guilt or innocence of individuals, but rather present evidence to a judge or a jury to make that determination. In these cases, my prosecutors presented a great deal of evidence to support the charges alleged. And although we came close to convicting one of the officers when his case was tried before 12 Baltimore City residents, the judge, who is within his right, has made it clear that he doesn't agree with the state's theory of the case and does not believe that any of the actions or inactions of these officers rise to the level of criminality. The judge has acquitted three of these officers, one of the arresting officers, the wagon driver, the highest ranking police officer in these matters. In light of these consistent outcomes, the likelihood of the remaining defendant's decision to elect a bench trial with this very same judge is highly probable, and unfortunately, so is the outcome. And while to this day we stand by the decisions, the legal theories, the charges and assertions set forth in the statement of probable cause and during these proceedings, as officers of the court, we must respect the verdicts rendered by the judge regarding the ultimate culpability of the adjudicated officers involving Freddie Gray's death as final, no matter how much we may disagree with his rulings. We do not believe that Freddie Gray killed himself. We stand by the medical examiner's determination that Freddie Gray's death was a homicide. However, after much thought and prayer, it has become clear to me that without being able to work with an independent investigatory agency from the very start, without having a say in the election of whether our cases proceed in front of a judge or a jury, without communal oversight of policing in this community, without real substantive reforms to the current criminal justice system, we could try this case 100 times and cases just like it, and we would still end up with the same result. Accordingly, I have decided not to proceed on the cases against Officer Garrett, Sergeant Alicia White, or to relitigate the case against William Porter. As a mother, the decision not to proceed on these trials, on the remaining trials, is agonizing. However, as a chief prosecutor elected by the citizens of Baltimore, I must consider the dismal likelihood of conviction at this point, the judicial economy in proceeding further, and the divisive impact that continuing this prosecution could potentially have on our community. What I've ultimately learned throughout this arduous process is that although no small task, justice is always worth the price paid for its pursuit. You see, in spite of the fact that the verdicts didn't go in our favor, there have been many gains throughout this journey to ensure that what happened to Freddie Gray never happens to another person that comes into contact with police, justifiably or unjustifiably again. Never again should there be a question as to why someone is being stopped, detained, or arrested due to the fact that there will now soon be full implementation of body-worn cameras on all officers. Never again should someone be placed unsecured and defenseless in a metal wagon head first, feet shackled and handcuffed, due to the fact that off- officers are now required to secure and seatbelt all prisoners.
Yo, come on.
Never again should there be a need to rely on circumstantial evidence to observe what takes place inside police wagons due to the fact that cameras are now equipped in every one of them. Never again should an officer ignore or neglect a prisoner's request for medical attention to no avail due to the fact that it is now mandatory for officers to call a medic when requested. Never again should a commanding officer or a rank and file officer be able to assert that they are unaware of departmental policies, general orders, or procedures due to the fact that there is now a software verification and accountability system to ensure their adherence. Never again should an officer exhibit a blatant or reckless disregard for human life due to the fact that there are now use of force policies that emphasize the sanctity of life, accentuates de-escalation, and requires that officers intervene if fellow officers cross the line. You see, what I've learned through this experience is that every battle, every hurdle, every obstacle that we've overcome since the pursuit of these cases has brought us one step closer to equality, and that any and every step towards equality in our justice system is well worth fighting for. This system is in need of reform, and when it comes to police accountability, and as long as I'm the chief prosecutor for this city, I vow to you that my office and I will fight. We will fight for a fair and equitable justice system for all, so that whatever happened to Freddie Gray never happens to another person in this community again. Thank you.
All right, so Delta, what do you think? Would you say that we did gain some wins, as she kind of alluded to in her press conference, even though she wasn't successful in actually prosecuting the six officers? There were some changes that will now be made.
I believe that too, but people got to realize this. Her hands was already tied from the jump. And it ain't so much that she wasn't going to do this and she wasn't going to do that. The police is a code of silence. And they already got judges and everybody. Them judges is not going to go against those police officers.
And neither will the prosecutors, really.
And it's very rare.
Not too much. Mm-hmm. They work together. They work hand in hand. They are a part of the state. And the state signs her checks, and the city signs the police checks, and it all blends and works together under the same umbrella. So, what do you think? Because we had a discussion about this, and then I want to jump into your letter, Delta, and we can pick back up on some of the other topics. And Feather Light's going to bring us to mind, body, and spirit, too. In terms of the families accepting the payout, the money, because I think Freddie Gray's family settled for $6.4 million. And let's see, like Trayvon Martin's family, they were able to sue the Housing Association. Mike Brown's family, they were awarded some money. Rakia Boer's family in Chicago, I think they were awarded like $5.4 million, I think. Well, you know, that's the common result now. No police are serving time for the murders, not too much. Now, we have Daniel Holesclaw, the one that was raping the women. But, you know, he had a little Japanese in him, so, you know, they're throwing his tail under the bus, a little Asian in him or something. And well, nobody was really checking for him too much. So what do you think about the accepting the money, the family accepting the money, Delta? Is that the justice that they would just have to settle with in the settlement?
I think so, and I don't think they just have to settle for that. I think they have to be join groups and become active, just like me with my grandkids. You hear me constantly talking about it, and I think they should join groups, but I don't see nothing wrong with them accepting the money, because like I told you from day one, that's all they're gonna get is the money, because they are not finna put no policeman in jail for killing no black man. So I don't think it's anything wrong with them getting the money, because if they get the money, to me, at least they got something. Their child life, they got something. But not getting nothing at all.
I wouldn't turn the money down. I'll tell you that much. I wouldn't turn down 5.9 or 6.4.
Oh, I wouldn't either. I wouldn't turn down 100,000.
Delta, because either way it goes, your child is not coming back.
That is correct.
I would say, like what you're saying, take the money and invest it in the movement in some kind of way. Do something. So Michael Jordan gave $1 million to the NAACP and the police department.
Invest in a movement, but you have a lot of those people who don't have homes and different things, and those people need to buy homes. And I must tell people, they get all that money and they go buy a home. But you got to think about that, because the average person that get a lawsuit, that don't know how to handle their money, don't know how to invest, you go buy a house that's very, very expensive, and at the end of the year, you can't pay them taxes. You're going to lose that house. So you better buy you a house that you know that you can get an average job and pay taxes on. And if you're going to keep that house, you need to get that house, get something, and make money for something, money to come back. But if not, you don't need to go buy no houses where your taxes a year is $10,000 a year.
So what would you say, Delta? Maybe they should just buy like a few small homes to start out with.
They can buy
and
a few,
be able to lease those out.
And they should buy them some rental property, but everybody out of the woodwork's gonna come. Everybody out of the woodwork's gonna come and want a piece of the action.
Right. Okay.
So they should buy them two or three rental properties and rent it out, and don't let family stay in it, because family was one. And family, I'll put family out in a minute, and my family know I will. So I don't even rent to them.
Yeah.
And you don't mean it in a bad way, because you got the mortgage and the bank people still got to be paid.
Right, and family will be trying to tell you, well, you know, Johnny got to go to school, and I have to get Johnny some clothes. And you said you were going to help me buy him some clothes anyway. And why don't I just give you this amount and deduct the part that you said you were going to give me to help get all this kind of stuff that you have to deal with family. Oh, my God, when it comes to business, sometimes, I agree with you, Delta. Friends or family, they will take advantage of you. And not maliciously, like they're just being evil or bad. It's just that they're taking you for granted because you're family, and they just feel like, well, you know, help me out, I'm family. So, yeah. Now, if you want to stay for free, just say that. But don't come in this property telling me you're going to pay rent, and you know you're not. Every other month, you're trying to be late.
Yeah. But I still say, let's move back to the main topic, if you don't mind, Black Roll. I must say, them people should take the money, because your children are dead, your children are not coming back, and you should get something. To me, at least you got some justice. A lot of people say don't take the money, but they should. And I don't see nothing wrong with them taking the money to better their life and make it comfortable, you know, for the family members, like Tamir Rice's mother. I think she was living in a project.
They said she was really struggling. She was really, really struggling, because I think she had to move wherever she was living. She had to move from there because it was right across the street from the park with Tamir was shot. So she was in between housing for a moment, and there was a GoFundMe up for her.
I think they should take the money and better their life. They don't want the money, but they don't have a choice. They don't have a choice. You want to kill my child?
Yeah. Well, let me read your letter, Delta, and then we'll bring in Feather Light with the mind, body, and spirit. So, all right, I'll get this letter for you, Delta. We have a good hot letter for you tonight. And if you have a question that you're just scratching your head about, and you just don't know, you may not want to talk to your friends about it, or a family member, or you just want to hear some advice from Delta Cougar, who can tell you how to bake a cake, how to cook a possum, a coon, a chicken, a rabbit, how to rent property, how to make a
and also how to cook turtle soup.
I heard turtle soup is good though. Mm-hmm. I heard it's good, but I don't want to try it. But I heard it's pretty good though.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just be thinking about that little head might just pop up out the soup. It'd just be too much for me. But okay, so Delta, this is a lady. She says, Delta, tell the truth. Now, I'm just going to kind of abbreviate this one. She says, Dear Delta, I love listening to you, and I need your help on this issue, as we always say. But I really need some help with this because I don't know what to do. I'm a Christian woman like yourself, and I try to do what's right. I'm a woman of the faith. Me and my boyfriend of 2 years, of 2.5 years, really enjoy each other. We spend a lot of time together, and we have been extremely happy with each other. And let me just cut down here. So in planning his birthday party, he and I went to the grocery store with his best friend. I went to the grocery store with his best friend to select the groceries and things that we would need for my boyfriend's birthday party. Okay, I was getting a little confused by the way she wrote this. Okay. So, while at the store, his friend, who I've known, began to flirt with me. And Delta, I actually liked it. Believe it or not, I kissed him. And now I feel bad. I feel guilty because I'm really attracted to him. As we walked in the store, we talked about a lot of the things that me and my boyfriend, believe it or not, don't or have not talked about. I just found out in conversing with him that we have a lot in common. Delta, I don't know what to do. I want to tell my boyfriend, but I don't know if I should do this because could it just be lust or what? What do you think? Please help. Confused.
Oh, my God. And it could be lust. It really could be lust. But yet it could be that he's giving her something emotional. Mm-hmm. That the boyfriend is not given. Mm-hmm. And why are you so attracted to him? So that tells me right there, it may have been something there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a chance to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
And it picked up on it. And then another thing, he knows all your weakness from talking to your boyfriend, and from
interacting. You know how men like to talk.
And interacting with her boyfriend. So he sees the way they be. And a lot of times, men would take advantage of that just to get in your pants. Then they'll go and sleep with you. Then come back and tell your best friend that, hey, she ain't no good.
Mm-hmm.
She ain't no good. So you got to be very careful. You don't know if they setting you up else you don't know that, and then some of them may share it and don't think nothing about it. So evidently she's not really
share
in love.
You mean what, like share the woman?
Share the woman.
Or the person?
Share the person. And then another thing, the number one thing of all, she's not really that much into love with her boyfriend. Because if she was so in that much in love with him, she wouldn't have been attracted to the other. So that tells me something is really liking in the relationship.
For them to be kissing all in the grocery store.
For them to be kissing
like
all in the grocery
store.
And then not on the top of that, that tells you something is liking in the relationship. She's saying her and her boyfriend has been together and they have a good relationship together. But yet, you just go to the grocery store with somebody and he go to talking nice to you and kissing on you and turn you on, that says a lot about you right there. That says you ain't what you should be. Because if you had no business even crossing that boundary with your boyfriend's best friend. With his best friend. So that tells
me. Well, maybe she just got a little hot, Delta. Maybe.
But that's what I'm
like
saying. That is what I'm saying.
What if she just felt that attraction? So you think she should tell her boyfriend, her guy friend? Do you think she should tell him and say, "Hey, look, this is what happened"?
No,
I enjoyed it.
No, if she plan on staying with him, and she need to be as a woman. Can I give a perfect example?
Make it
there
quick,
was
Delta,
this is a true story.
Like
let me quick. There was a man one time when I was married to my first husband, who's now deceased. He made a pass at me, and he told me what he thought about me and how much he liked me and this and that. These are the exact words I said to the man. I can remember it just like it was yesterday. I told him, and I was a hot firecracker back then, but I told him, I said, "I am so sorry you feel that way towards me." I said that if I done anything to give you that impression, please forgive me. I am sorry. I said I am not that type of woman, and please forgive me. A man would try you and don't mean you no good, but all he want to do is get what he can do to get his pleasure at that moment. When I told that man those words, the man was so moved about what I said. The man told me, "Forgive me. I am so sorry that I approached you that way." And the man said, "The reason I approached you that way, because I admire you and I like the way you look and I admire you." And I just told him, "I was sorry if I done anything." And I was sincere, and I meant that from the bottom of my heart. So you got to carry yourself in a way. So this let me know the bottom line to the whole story is carry yourself in a way that you should be able to go to your boyfriend and go back to him. Because see, me, I didn't get out of the way with the man. That told me my relationship with my husband was more important than a kiss and me liking it. So that tells me y'all relationship is not where it should be. It's not as strong as you claim it to be. Because if it was strong like you said it was, it wouldn't have never, it wouldn't have never been a kiss, and the words wouldn't have never went to the other way, leading out of the way. That
all
is
right.
My advice.
All right. Okay. Well, Delta, I will post this on the Lotus Place Facebook page so that confused can see your advice. Thank you so much, Delta, for sharing that. And
amen.
I know that some people have
probably experienced something like that before, so and you can send your questions to Delta by going on Delta Cougar's Facebook page or the Lotus Place Radio Show Facebook page and share your question, or email us at the Lotus Place Radio Show at gmail.com. All right. Thanks, Delta. Featherlight, you have a mind, body, and spirit?
Actually, instead of doing the mind, body, and spirit, because I wanted to kind of have a little discussion about it, so let's say that for another night, I'm going to just read something that I saw on with regards to Black Lives Matter.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Black Lives Matter!
So this is a good explanation of why we don't like to hear all lives matter. This is something that I saw someone else had posted. So,
okay.
These are their words. A good explanation of why we don't like to hear all lives matter. Imagine that you're sitting down to dinner with your family, and while everyone else gets a serving of the meal, you don't get any. So you say, I should get my fair share. And as a direct response to this, your dad corrects you, saying, everyone should get their fair share. Now, that's a wonderful sentiment, indeed, everyone should. And that was kind of your point in the first place, that you should be a part of everyone, and you should get your fair share also. However, dad's smart-ass comment just dismissed you and didn't solve the problem that you still haven't gotten in it. The problem is that the statement, I should get my fair share, had an implicit too, T-O-O, at the end. I should get my fair share too, just like everyone else. But your dad's response treated your statement as though you meant, only I should get my fair share, quote unquote, which clearly was not your intention. As a result, his statement that, quote, everyone should get their fair share, quote unquote, while true, only served to ignore the problem you were trying to point out. That's the situation of the Black Lives Matter movement. Culture, laws, the arts, religion, and everyone else repeatedly suggests that all lives should matter. Clearly, that message already abounds in our society. The problem is that, in practice, the world doesn't work that way. You see the film Nightcrawler? You know the part where Renee Russo tells Jake Gyllenhaal that she doesn't want footage of a black or Latino person dying? She wants news stories about affluent white people being killed? That's not made up out of whole cloth. There is a news bias toward stories that the majority of the audience, who are white, can identify with. So when a young black man gets killed prior to the recent police shootings, it's generally not considered quote-unquote news, while a middle-aged white woman being killed is treated as news. And to a large degree, that is accurate. Young black men are killed in significantly disproportionate numbers, which is why we don't treat it as anything new. But the result is that, societally, we don't pay as much attention to certain people's deaths as we do to others. So, currently, we don't treat all lives as though they matter equally.
Mm-hmm.
Just like asking Dad for your fair share, the phrase, quote, Black Lives Matter, quote unquote, also has an implicit too at the end. It's saying that black lives should also matter. But responding to this by saying, quote, all lives matter, close quote, is willfully going back to ignoring the problem. It's a way of dismissing the statement by falsely suggesting that it means oh, only Black Lives Matter, when that is obviously not the case. And so saying all lives matter as a direct response to Black Lives Matter is essentially saying that we should just go back to ignoring the problem. You have organizations such as National Organization for Women, Asian Americans Advancing Justice, Jewish Social Justice Roundtable, Justice for Native People, over 60 organizations like that, Justice for Workers and Marginalized Communities in India, Chinese Progressive Organization for Democracy, Justice, and Equality, Open Society Justice Initiative for Mexicans, and I could go on. All these organizations, and over 100 more, are created each year by peoples who have suffered from injustices from either their country or this one. So, the point is, it's not just saying only Black Lives Matter. It's really saying Black Lives Matter too. And that is the end of my little speech on Black Lives Matter.
All right. Well,
that's another perspective. You know, people always say, all lives matter. And to me, it's like ignoring. You know, you try to ignore what I'm saying, you know?
Mm-hmm. So. And you completely missing the point of what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Or you're right. Just being insensitive to what I'm saying, because it's not that we don't know. We know all lives matter. You don't recognize that all lives matter, and particularly Black lives. That's what we're saying.
Right.
Exactly. That's the message. You're the one that don't recognize that all lives matter. Hell.
Exactly.
For you to sit here and have to say, oh, we know that.
Yeah.
We know that. It's these people trying to flip it like, oh, so you saying that blue lives don't matter, yellow lives don't matter, trans lives. Everybody lives matter. You know, but when we were trying to push that our lives are the ones that are being our lives and voices are being disenfranchised, murdered, just wiped out, complete genocide, plans of destruction for our lives. That's what we're saying. So, oh my God, that, you know, and that's a whole show that we should do, and I would love to have some people from Black Lives Matter come on. I don't even care to hear anything about anybody's argument coming from All Lives Matter. No, you're not welcome. We're not debating that. That's stupid. I'm not wasting time with that. We know All Lives Matter.
Right.
I would love to have some of the Black Lives Matter activists. We'll have to reach out to them and have some of them come on. So, thank you for that. Thank you. So, any comments about what we've shared tonight? Any of our topics? Let me give you a hand clap. I did want to hear that Pebble story. I was looking forward to that.
Okay. Well, let me try to run it through right quick. We got 7 minutes. Okay. Here we go. Hold on. Pebbles in Our Shoes. I'll try to read fast, and maybe we can discuss it at another time. I was talking with my sister in Virginia the other day, and after lengthy conversation, she casually mentioned that she and my brother-in-law had an argument. Now, quite frankly, I don't like his personality worth a pot of beans, so I wasn't surprised. However, when she said they argued over the raft of police shootings, I kind of missed a step. I pretty much know where my little sister stands on these issues, so I'm thinking, like, what's their argument? So, not to share the complete conversation, but here are just a couple of the points that I wanted to share with the audience that my brother-in-law brought up about these police shootings. number one. Well, there are only a few bad apples in the barrel. Get rid of those, fire them, and that will solve the problem. Number two, the cops, are trained to be cautious. They have a tough job. People should do as they're told, not resist, blah, 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 blah. Number three, regarding my sister's comments about, you know, the system that's corrupt, he said, to think that many cops are involved in this type of behavior is like putting a blanket over the whole situation and over the whole group and blah, 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 and that's not fair. Number four, to think that the system itself is wrong, that the force has been infiltrated with KKK, that police killings have always been a problem, is a strange way of looking at the whole matter. And he asked my sister, did your parents teach you that? Okay. She said no, because he has witnessed it and it's just something that you know. Then when his daughter, who's just finished college, she agreed with my sister, he said, oh, she's poisoned too, quote unquote. Lastly, regarding the recent incident of a young woman being yanked out of her car and thrown to the ground, my brother-in-law said she must have said something. Oh, my God. To this, my baby sister, 16 years younger than me, 17, to this, my sister cut him off and said, quote unquote, pardon my language, I don't give a damn if she said, fuck you, you piece of shit. He had no right to touch her. We have the right to speak, write her up, and be gone. So that really, really threw me. I said to Black Rose, I said, we got one in the family. Oh, my God. There are many black and white, who feel as my brother-in-law does. That this is all acceptable. That this rampage of killing unarmed people of color is acceptable. We've got some pebbles in our shoes. Muhammad Ali once said, and I quote, it isn't the mountains ahead to climb that wear you out. It's the pebbles in your shoe. Black Talk Radio audience, we've got some pebbles.
Your conference recording has stopped.
And until we remove those pebbles, that mountain will continue to seem insurmountable. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take a Thurgood Marshall to know our human rights as people of color are violated every day. Your attitude towards your life affects your circumstances and your conditions. If you feel you have no value, chances are you're going to attract things with no value. That's the energy that you're sending out. I spoke about the four agreements a few weeks back. There is such a thing as a collective agreement, which we didn't get into. And our collective agreement is negative. Collective agreement, it's like collective energy, since everything is energy. It's like a belief system. Black people, particularly African Americans, hold a collective subconscious belief system based on fear that they are somewhat inferior, and have had steadfast to this belief based on outward treatment, their parents' agreement and teachings, and despicable behavior by others in control for over two centuries. We have to find the courage to break those agreements that are fear-based and claim our personal power. If we can see it as our agreements which rule our life, and we don't like this dream of our own life, we need to change the agreements. When there are enough people who collectively disagree with that law of vibration and through their new higher energy vibration say, oh no, we won't tolerate this anymore. We have a right to be here, a right to feel safe and secure in this world, the right of the first chakra, the root, we will see a change in our condition. We've tried marching, chanting, protests, sittings, boycotts, even separation like Rosewood and Black Wall Street, and arming ourselves like the Panthers, meetings appealing to a people's better nature, and petitions for legislature. This is a spiritual war. Promises mean nothing, and legislature is drawn up using slick and ambiguous terms to continue the centuries-old oppression, like the Emancipation Proclamation. Have you read it lately? African Americans may be one of the most, if not the most, religious groups in this country, but they are the weakest spiritually, in my humble opinion. When we realize who we are, not just geographically from the motherland, but who we truly are, and begin to master our inner selves, then and only then will we be able to defeat our most formidable foes, regardless of what skin covers their earthly bodies. Great athletes like Muhammad Ali and warriors like Shaka Zulu not only prepared themselves physically and mentally after developing a strategy, they also strengthened themselves spiritually. Praying and only praying is the coward's way out. Faith without works is dead. The mind follows the spirit, the body follows the mind. First, know who you are, and if you don't know this, others can dictate this for you. Second, know you have the right. If you don't have the spirit to fight for what's rightfully yours, you will always lose. Third, strengthen your mind, your body, and spirit, whatever way works best for you. Learn how your energy works. Every thought vibrates, every thought radiates a signal, and every thought attracts a matching signal back. When we can change our energy vibrations one by one, like Michael Jackson said, man in mirror, until we have a collective energy vibration that is higher than energy that oppresses. Higher vibrations consume and transform lower ones. Thus, each and every one of us can change the energies in our lives by being aware of this and understanding how it works. They've got it down pat. They know. They've known for some time. This is the season of knowing. Know thyself. Muhammad Ali said, it's okay to be humble around your home and your family, but humble people don't get very far in this world. The ruling class, I'm finishing up, the ruling class makes chess moves using us as pawns, like the unbelievably shameless chess move made by Mrs. Trump earlier to cause heightened emotions, to cause chatter, reactions, anger, another distraction to keep us busy, keep our minds busy buzzing about them, not about us. That's a pebble in our shoe. Finally, if you do not feel that you have the right to live safe and secure, especially from those in authority, you may be a pebble in the shoe. To climb this mountain we face, any and all pebbles must be dislodged from our shoe. Change your vibration, change your circumstance. Namaste. Now take a deep breath and yoke with your higher self.
All right. Ooh, let me yoke. Thank you so much. Thank you. Namaste to you and
namaste.
Peace and good night. We have to come back and revisit that. We will revisit that piece. Thank you. Pebble in your shoe.
Pebble in your
shoe. Yes, indeed. Everybody have a prosperous